Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. You know, today is kind of a special show for me. You know, this young lady that I have on the show, I'm kind of close to her. I was able to shoot her pro debut for Invicta Fighting Championships, and she just kind of captured me even before that, as I had her on the show even before that day came close. But now she's gone on to fight in The Ultimate Fighter Season 26, and she's proven to be one of the best in the world. If you look at her record, she hasn't fought a slouch. With that being said, I want to welcome Sajara Sarge Eubanks to the show. How you doing, Sajara?
Hey, Don. I'm doing fantastic, man. Thanks for having me. You know, I've been interviewing with you for a while, and we've had a relationship, and I'm happy to keep it going here tonight.
Oh, you and me both. You know, all these people go out there, and you know the platform of my show. It's to hear the real. You know, people go out there, and they speculate. They post things that aren't true, and they make assumptions on the Internet nowadays. That's just a simple known fact. You know, one thing that I admired about you, you stepped up right off a fight with Aston Ladd, who's now in the UFC. You went straight to the Ultimate Fighter House, and arguably you beat some of the best fighters in your weight class in the world. What did that moment mean for you, Sarge, to get that call to the Ultimate Fighter and go in there with that much, you know, knowledge and, I guess you would say, enthusiasm in your heart with passion?
It was probably one of the best phone calls of my life. You know, I've been working hard in martial arts for, you know, a decade now between jiu-jitsu and MMA. And I'm just, you know, I always knew I would get into the UFC. I always knew I'd be a UFC champ. It was just kind of a matter of when. And after that fight with Aspen Ladd, I was kind of, you know, trying to figure out what's next. It's kind of always hard for me to get fights. I get turned down a lot. So I do fight some of the best in my division, you know, even early on into my career, because, you know, it's just hard to find fights. So I was kind of waiting around for a fight. My daughter had just been born, and when I saw the tryouts, I knew that that was my – I knew right away that that was my end. I knew I was going to get into the UFC through the Ultimate Fighter, and I knew that this was going to be my path to the top. And I kind of looked at it as a more like a rocket ship to the top, and I just kind of had a gut feeling that that was my break. And, you know, I went out to the tryouts. When they left the tryouts, they said, you know, it'll take us 4 or 6 weeks before we call you back. But I started preparing for the show right away because I knew after the tryouts, I knew with the relationships I developed with the producers and things like that, that I would be selected and that my life was going to change forever. And so it was a critical turning point in my career and one of the best days when they called and were like, yeah, you're on. I was like, ha, I knew it. Thank you.
Now, does the same apply for you like it did Diego Lima? You know, I want to get the facts straight. As you know, my show is transparent. Now, when Diego Lima fought in season 25 and he came up a little bit short, he didn't realize that he still had a six-fight deal with the UFC. Now, is that still portrayed in the aspects of you, Sarge?
Well, my situation was a little different because – hang on just a second. Just a second. I have I'm on an interview and my partner's gonna be up in 5 minutes. Can you wait like 2 seconds?
You don't have another one in this building, so I'll go there and then I'll come back.
Yep. Thank you. Okay. Sorry, I know we're live.
I'll
repair something. Anyway, so my situation was a little different because when I came out the house, I was in the finals, so I did have a 6-fight deal set up. And then when I was unable to make it to the finals because of my hospitalization, that particular deal was scratched, and we're working on a new one now as we speak. So I can't really get into the details of the new one, but the UFC is happy to have me, and I will have a multiple fight deal here signed shortly.
See, that's what I was getting at, because, you know, Diego Lima didn't even realize that he had a 6-fight deal. You know, he came on the show that day, and his manager had just texted him, and he had sent him the copy of the contract, and it was funny because on the show he goes, you know, I just got a text, and I just realized I have a 6-fight deal. I'm in the UFC, baby. So it was kind of a funny thought. You know, he didn't even realize it until we were live. But, you know, one thing you're talking about already, Lee, you know, and you know my show dwells into the different aspects. How is it like having a child now? How is it like for you and your partner to be able to express your love and enjoy in that side of your life?
It's amazing. You know, when we first planned on having a baby and starting our family, I guess I was a little bit naive to the fact that your life really does change, because everyone says, like, oh, the moment she's born, your life is going to change and you're going to become this whole new person and your life's going to revolve around this baby. And I kind of was like, well, I mean, you know, my life's probably going to be the same, but I have a little person to hang out with. I have, like, a little buddy. But it really is. It is the cliche. It is just like you say it is. It's like you sort of think about things differently. Like, I look at everything differently. I look at the educational system differently. I look at healthcare differently. I look at my own behavior differently. Like, you know, I look at how I carry myself differently. I look at even when it came down to, you know, the weight cut. Like, I had to keep in mind, like, you know, I have to fighting. I look at differently. My whole life has been fighting for the last 10 plus years. Everything I did revolved around the next tournament or the next fight or getting to the gym. And now it's kind of like, it, you know, that's a priority, but I have a whole nother life after fighting. I have a whole nother person to think about other than myself. And it's crazy, but it's been a blast. It's been fun. And, you know, like with this whole debacle, this whole weight cut debacle with me in the finals, like, you know, I'm super bummed about it. You know, just heart wrenching. But, you know, I come home, my daughter doesn't know the difference. She's just happy to see me. She don't know whether,
yeah.
She don't know what's happening.
No, it's wonderful. I like it. And you can hear the joy in your voice. And, you know, it's called growing up, my friend. You know, I know the exact same feeling you're talking about, because my son is 31 years old. And, you know, when my son was first born, I kind of thought the same way you did. I was like, you know, it's just going to be another addition to life, more bills, and, you know, I'm happy it's my son or whatever. But then once he was born, you know, my son had to be kept in the hospital for a couple of days because he had jaundice. And I found myself, I was there every day, 24 hours a day, and it was like, wow, this is so cool. This is different. Oh, you can hear in the background. That's cool. You know, but it does change life for you, and it makes you grow up. And see, the thing about maturity, it can only make you a better fighter. You know, you look at your career thus far. I mean, yeah, you have 10 years in the sport, but truly as a pro, it hasn't been very long. And not most people get the opportunities that you've had, Sajara. You know, you've had some tremendous opportunities put in front of you. You beat the best in the world. I mean, how does that sit with you, knowing that now you have a daughter, now you can look at your fighting record and what you're doing as a legacy? You're creating something for your daughter to look back and future generations of your family. So what does it mean to you, heritage-wise and heart-wise, for you to know you're doing that?
Oh, man, it's fantastic. It feels like, you know, and the funny thing is her middle name is Sarge, so I literally have a mini Sarge. It's, you know, I've always wanted to pass on, as a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, you kind of know your lineage, and you always want to pass on your lineage. I knew one day I was going to teach Jiu-Jitsu and have my own students, but to know that, you know, there's a possibility that one of the future students, one of my future lineages could be my own child, my own daughter, that just means everything to me. And to be able to pass on all of the things I learned through martial arts, dignity, honor, you know, courage, things like that, that's what you learn through life and fighting and through martial arts. And to be able to teach her those things, how to teach her confidence, how to, you know, teach her how to defend herself, how to carry herself, like that's I can't wait, man. As she grows, I can't wait to be able to share those things with her and be able to share my experiences with her, to be able to share her, you know, to tell her the ups and downs of my life and my career, and hopefully have her learn from some of the stuff that I learned from. It really develops a sense of pride and joy in me every day. So it's exciting. I can't wait, man. I hope she's in the martial arts. I'm not gonna force it on her, but I really hope that she gets the jiu-jitsu bug one day.
That's what I'm talking about. You know, I think it's tremendous to hear the joy in your voice. You know, that's one thing I love about being able to do these things. You can get to, you know, talk to people on a regular level, not, like I said earlier, like the internet or things of that nature. But, you know, with this show, it does come some hard questions, you know, the elephant in the room. You know, and one thing that comes to mind, Sarge, is where do you feel best suited? You know, some people say 125. Some people say you should move to 135. But I'd like to best hear it from you. Where do you think you'd be best suited in this fighting world?
I believe I'm best suited at flyweight at 125. And, I'll tell you why. When, you know, as you said, I have been in martial arts for 10 years, but my MMA career is still relatively young, relatively new. When I first started fighting MMA as an amateur, in my first couple of pro fights, the UFC only had 115 and 135. And so I kind of felt like with the pace that I was getting, as far as the tough fights I was getting, I felt at best that I sort of try to bulk to 135. I'm really, really short for a bantamweight. I'm 5'4", and a lot of other bantamweights are much taller and just have a different build than I do. And so I actually, even doing jiu-jitsu, I went up a weight class just so I can get used to throwing around heavier bodies. I was doing jiu-jitsu at 163 just so I can get used to dealing with bigger girls. And that's what I had been doing for 4 or 5 years. And then when the flyweight division finally broke out, because I thought the UFC would have introduced the flyweight division a little sooner. And when they went straight to 45, I was like, oh, well, all right. Well, it's probably going to be some time before flyweights come around. And I just hung out at walking around at over 55. You know, I was walking at 57 when they announced the flyweight division. So I knew years back that I was probably a flyweight, but I decided to try to get bigger. And so when you spend that much time getting bigger, your muscle mass gets a little heavier. I'm lifting weights and things like that. So when they finally announced the flyweight division, I knew I was definitely on the bigger side. But structurally, I'm a flyweight. I just have to now take away some of that muscle mass that I spent so many years developing. So it was just the speed of what happened. You know, one day I'm fighting Aspen Ladd at 135, and 2 months later they announce a flyweight division, and I'm scrambling trying to get as much weight off as possible in time for the show. So I knew that the cuts were going to be tough, but I knew that physically my body could do it because I'm small. I'm really not as big as everyone thinks I am. I just have been walking around a little big for the last couple of years trying to get to bantamweight. So, and on top of that, you know, I've established myself as a flyweight in the house. I beat Roxanne, who's considered the number one going in. I beat Deanna Bennett going in. You know, and I feel like I've established myself as a flyweight as far as the rankings go. And I think it's career-wise smarter to stay at flyweight because I'm at the top of the heap. I'm at the top of the pack. I'm currently ranked number one in the UFC rankings. So I believe if I try to go up to 135, I have to go back to that bulking process for one. For two, I have to start all over again. I have to establish myself as a 35er, and I'd be at the bottom of the ladder and climbing to the top. So just as far as my size, as far as my experience, as far as where I'm at, I believe flyweight's the best way to go.
Yes, you know, I have to agree. Now, one thing that kind of catches me a little bit, you know, one thing that most people don't realize that it takes a lot out of you when you realize that the way The Ultimate Fighter is filmed. A lot of people don't really realize that the fights are way in advance. Some do, some don't. Would you say that the way the program is structured, that it made it a little bit harder for you once the house ended waiting for the finale?
Yeah, it kind of does because you're in the house for 6 weeks, and the way that things are filmed, you're really fighting every, you know, as you progress through the tournament, you're fighting every 7 to 10 days. And for me, I didn't fight for the whole first 2 weeks, and so for 2 weeks I didn't fight at all. I was just training. And then the last 4 weeks, you jam in three cuts and three fights. So, and then after that, you have all of this time. And when you first come at the house, you know, all the other girls, you know, said the same thing. You just want to run home to your family and just get back to real life. You know, you have no contact with the outside world, no radio, no phone, no books, no internet. So it's like, it's almost like coming out from underground. You've got like, I'm trying to catch up with the news. I'm trying to catch up with my daughter. I'm trying to catch up with my family. You know, in the midst of that, I also moved from Maryland up to New York City. I joined a whole new camp. So, you know, a lot happens after the house. And then before you know it, you turn around and you're like, oh crap, I'm back in fight camp because I got a championship fight here. You know, and when you're preparing for a 5-round title fight, you know, ideally you want 8 to 10 weeks. So by the time you kind of get over the what the F over the tournament, over the tough house, like by the time you even process like, yo, was I really just locked in a house for 6 weeks with all these girls and all these experiences and everybody wants to know what happened, everybody, you know, wants to get the details, and then before you know it, you're back in fight camp. So it was a whirlwind. So the transition from the house back into the real world was probably harder than going into the house, honestly.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people don't really correlate the two together and the difference of how they run it. And it's just, I think it's a hard, rigorous task for most, you know, athletes. I know other athletes that have gone through the same situation with you. Now, one thing that I'm concerned, because I'm a friend, you know, due to the weight cut issues, you know, and people on the internet, of course, talking about kidney damage and failure and this and that, was there any crucial harm done to your body, Sarge?
So the thing is, you know, I'm a fighter. You know, fighters, we have, you know, these things, you know, like, ah, I'm all right, let's keep it going. So I really knew something was wrong, but I didn't know how wrong it was when I had hit, like, 130. And, you know, I was at the UFC PI, and you know, Clint, the head of nutrition there, was like, you know, we're going to have to call the doctor. I think you got some pretty bad symptoms here. And so I was kind of hoping, you know, we could work something out. But when I got to the hospital and they tested my blood, the doctors there came back and said I had acute kidney failure and that my creatinine levels were way out of whack, and that even though it doesn't look like at that point there was any permanent kidney damage, I had to get a couple of bags of IV in me, some saline in me, you know, as soon as possible to make sure that it didn't get worse. Because what they were telling me, what I was trying to do was just avoid the bags, because, you know, a saline bag will put weight on, and see if I can do a catch weight, you know, give up the title shot and still fight somebody on Saturday night at like 130 or 129. And they were like, no, if you sit here like this without any fluids, your kidneys are going to get worse, and you could do some permanent damage to your body, you know. So I kind of had to, you know, they kind of were like, you got to take, you know, when they started talking, you know, permanent kidney damage, you might not ever fight again. So I kind of had to take it on the chin. It's like, all right, well, give me a bag. So I got a saline bag in me. So they told me to rest a week. They tested my kidneys before I left the hospital. They wanted to keep me overnight for observation. I'm not a fan of hospitals. I've never been hospitalized before that time, and I wanted to get the heck out of there as soon as possible. So I kept begging them to test my kidneys. And so I got tested right before I left the hospital, and they said that my kidney function was like 90% back to normal, and that I could leave the hospital if I wanted to, but that I should not do any physical activity for at least a week, and then keep the fluids, just keep drinking water and, you know, Gatorade and things like that. So that's what I did. You know, when you hear acute kidney failure, even for as tough as I like to say I am, it's kind of scary. Like, you know, the first thing that came to my mind was like, oh my God, I'm not going to be like on dialysis or anything, am I? They were like, no, it's not that bad, but it is, your kidneys are jacked up right now. And to prevent any serious damage, you're going to have to get some liquid in you. And so that's what it was. So, you know, on the internet, people talk, some people, thought it was exaggerated. Some people didn't. I have a tendency to think ER doctors always lean towards the worst anyway. You know, when I'm in the ER, the doctors don't know about cutting. And so they were like, why would you not drink water? They're like, why are you doing this to yourself? And I was like, I'm trying to make weight for the fight. And they were like, that makes no sense to us whatsoever. You are going to hurt yourself if you don't let us put this bag in you. So that's what it was. You know, I think it was, yeah. I think it was bad, but it's not like anything permanent. I'm not going to be on like dialysis or anything like that. And it's not anything I can't bounce back from. I already started training this week. So, you know, it's a little easy training, but you know, I'm ready to bounce back.
Hey, you're back though, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Of course,
you know, but
I
know the feeling. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say my mom was probably the most concerned. She'd rather I sit down for a month, but I was like, I'm ready to get back in the gym.
Hey, aren't they all that way? You know, that's the tremendous things about mom. They at least, you know, you got one person that's going to worry more than everybody else. You know, I know where you're coming from though, because about 2 weeks before Thanksgiving, I just came home from a shoot and I sat down and boy, I jumped up and I about jumped through the roof and I landed on my feet with tears in my eyes. And I looked at my wife and I said, take me to the ER. And so we go to the hospital and we go to the ER. And, you know, the first thing this idiot says to me was, you know, do you want a pain shot? I said, no, I want to know what's going on. And
right.
So we get an MRI done and we find out that I herniated, you know, two or three discs. I crushed a couple discs. And The bad part about it is they had crushed my sciatic nerve base and trunk. And so I still didn't put in my head how bad this injury was.
Yeah.
And then they said, well, we can't operate on you for a couple days, but you have to stay in the hospital because otherwise you can become paralyzed. So I was like, what the hell? So I'm like,
yeah.
You know, here I'm freaking out and screw it, put me in the hospital. And, you know, they do the surgery and I'm kind of back to normal. I just shot the last Invicta. It was actually my first fight back shooting and I kind of feel better than ever, you know. And I hope
yeah.
the same for you because you truly have changed the sport. You've come on, like you said, you've been in the business for 10 years, but you're a new fighter to the sport of MMA. But since you stepped into the sport of MMA, you fought the best in the business. How bittersweet was it for you, Sarge, watching Roxanne Modafferi fight your fight?
Man, it was tough. It was, but, you know, I went to the fight. A lot of people were surprised to know that I went to the fights anyway. You know, UFC was kind enough to give me a front row seat. It's bittersweet. You kind of, you see someone out there that's fighting your fight, and as you're watching the fight, you're thinking, you know, what would I have done? I could have done this differently, or I could have done that differently. And, you know, Dana White literally walked right past me with the belt to put it on someone, and you just kind of know, you know, I woke up on Saturday morning like someone's going to be the champ today, and it's not going to be me for sure. It's not like I'm coming into a fight and, you know, I fought and then something went wrong or whatever. It's like I literally didn't even get a chance to step into the cage. So, you know, the sweet part is like, you know, I have my family. I do have my health. There's nothing seriously wrong now. And I have a chance to fight again. I still have a job with the UFC. You know, I have an opportunity to work with UFCPI to get to my proper walk around and to reframe my body in a way that's more efficient and healthy for flyweight. So there are silver linings that you really have to hang on to because it's so easy to let something like what happened to me break you. I think a lot of lesser fighters, male or female, would be broken from that. You know, I did an interview with Ariel Helwani. He's like, you know, I'm surprised you went. Most people would have just got out of Vegas as fast as possible. And it's like, oh, trust me, the thought crossed my mind. I thought about getting the hell out of town. But I just thought it would be more courageous in a step towards mentally recovering to go and watch what could have been mine and use that as motivation to get back at it. You know, it's a temporary setback. It's a heart-wrenching shot to the gut, but it's temporary. And just being able to hold my head up and walk into the arena and watch the rest of the girls fight that night and know that I will be back in there as soon as I can is motivational, and I'm glad I went to the fights, and I'm glad I have my health, and I just know that I'll be back in a title shot as soon as I can.
Yeah, you know, and I think it's tremendous of you. You know, your outlook is incredible, and I think a lot of warriors could look up at you and take a page out of your book and learn something from that. You know, that's kind of the way I've lived my life. You know, once I was diagnosed diabetic, and as you know, I lost my leg, and I've had a couple hundred surgeries since then. You know, mm-hmm. even going back to this back surgery, they said, you need to just lay down and relax and this and that. And here we are 10 days out, and I'm already shooting my first fight when people said I shouldn't even be walking. But, you know, I think there's even more of a, more than just a silver lining to this story. It could be golden if the UFC plays their cards right. You know, I, for one, and I know the sport and the fans of the sport would love the opportunity to see you fight Nico Montano. What would it mean for the UFC to offer you an opportunity to get the fight that you once had?
Oh, man, I would be extremely grateful. You know, right now I spend every day proving to the UFC that I'm going to do what I have to do. And, you know, if the UFC awarded me the opportunity, I would be, you know, extremely thankful, you know, appreciative, and I would definitely take advantage of it. You know, I'll be ready this time around. I'm not going to let you know, my size or anything else stop me. You know, like I said, the timing of my weight was just bad. You got to reframe your body to be in a different weight class. So I believe that the UFC will give me a shot at the title once I prove myself, and whatever it takes to prove that I'm a flyweight, you know, I'll send them. You know, I was joking around. I was like, I'll take a picture of myself on the scale every single day if you guys want. You know, I'll send you my meal plan and everything. And, you know, I'm actually working with the UFC assigned nutritionist and a UFC PI strength and conditioning coach. So I'm using the tools that the UFC has available to me to let them know that I'm taking this seriously and that I'm going to do what it takes to be a healthy flyweight. So I would love the opportunity to fight Nico. I think it would just be the comeback story of a lifetime. So, you know, but the only thing I can do right now is keep training, keep staying healthy, keep getting my walk around weight down, and wait for the call to see what's next.
Most definitely. You know, I some people would say that 2017, you know, truly wasn't the year for you, Sarge. I truly think it was. You know, you look at all that, the good, the bad, you take everything for the whole, and you sound like a renewed fighter. You sound, you know, even with the baby, you're looking at life in a different aspect. You know, I think whoever faces you next is going to have one hell of a challenge in front of them because you're reinvigorated. Would you say that in 2018, will you say that that's going to be the year of Sajara Eubanks?
Yeah, absolutely. 2017 was the year. You know, you had that right. A lot of people look and say, oh, she blew her title shot. You know, what a sucky year for her. I had a wonderful year, man. My daughter was born. You know, I made it through the Ultimate Fighter. I got more fans and more attention and more eyeballs on me than any other way possible than the Ultimate Fighter. Like, what better way to put your name on the map than to get knockout of the season and fight of the season on Ultimate Fighter? So, yeah, I'm on Fox Sports 1 every Wednesday. Like, that's crazy. You know, I got all the way up to a title shot, and I didn't lose. I didn't make it to the show, but I didn't lose either. So I thought 2017 was a year, and I think this setback I have only sets up for an even bigger year in 2018. You know, I am so excited to be working with the UFC PI in this new strength program that I'm doing, because I believe that with the professional help that I have now, I never had that before. I never had a hands-on nutritionist that will look at my body weight and tell me exactly what to eat, when to eat it. I never had a hands-on strength and conditioning coach that says you got this much body mass and this much fat, and we're going to do this much cardio and this much lifting, and you're going to be, you know, I was talking to Bo from the UCPI, and he was like, it's going to be like, you already have a nice car. It's going to be like, we're going to put it in the shop, and we're going to give it new tires, and we're going to give it oil change, and we're going to get a new engine in there, and you're going to be ripping and running. You're going to be a killer. I mean, that is exciting. And you nailed it on the head. head, Don, man. The next fight I have, whether it's Nico or anybody else, is, man, she's gonna have her hands full with me, because I'm hungrier than ever. I'm more determined than ever to get that title shot back, and I'm more determined than ever to be a healthy flyweight. And this is my division. This is my weight class. This is my time, and it's exciting. I think this is almost better, because I'm gonna be, getting knocked on your ass like that either breaks you or it makes you stronger. So I'm going to be even stronger, even faster, even better than I was before. So 2018 is going to be nasty. It's going to be a nasty year for whoever's locked in the cage with me.
Well, I already know that, because, you know, I've seen you fight. I've watched your career, and now I hear this reinvigorated Sarge. It's like, I wouldn't want to step up against you. You know, the thing that it amazes me, because you beat Roxanne Modafari. She got the slot. You know, you already know that opportunity you can already look past. So, I mean, in my opinion, it's the only option. You know, I think it's what the fans want. I think it's what the people want. You know, I think we need to give you, Sarge, that opportunity to do what you were meant to do that night, and that's face Nico Montano. You know, this sport is full of warriors, you know, but you inspire me, because I've watched you grow and I've watched what you're becoming, and it's truly a tremendous warrior. You know, you take what you learn from the mat, and, you know, most people don't understand nowadays that practitioners, that they don't make any money. So when you're in, you know, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, you're doing it for the passion and the love. Now you've transitioned yourself on the other side, and like we talked about earlier, it's a new Sarge. And I just can't wait for 2018. I think it's going to be the year that you truly do shine and show the sport what you're about. You know, I was honored you decided to come on the show. It truly was a tremendous opportunity for me, because I've loved watching your career. I love watching how you fight. You truly have proven time and time again that you deserve to be where you're at. At this point in time, I'm going to hand the microphone over to you, because I know there's a lot of people in your life that you want to pay thanks to that you really don't get opportunities, because most shows don't do that, but I'm willing to do that, you know, from Paige to the, you know, at the UFC, to your family, to whoever it may be. I'm going to hand the microphone over to you, and I'm going to let you pay homage to the people that truly back you, Sarge.
Thanks, Don. I really appreciate that, and it is hard to get all your thank yous in these interviews, but, you know, first and foremost, I got to thank, you know, our higher power. I got to thank the universe and God for giving me this opportunity and allowing me to be strong and go forward. My partner, Lily, who's been an incredible support system to me these last couple of years since we've been together. You know, she's the person behind the scenes that no one gets to hear or see, and she supports me. You know, we're home by ourselves, you know, mentally, physically, emotionally. She's always been there for me. Of course, my daughter, the rest of my family. Oh, Tinky, I'm talking about you. And my dad, my mom, my brothers and sisters. I had a lot of people want to come out. I got cousins all over the world. So all my family that supported me, I got to say thank you to them. And also thank you to all the coaches and training partners I've had over the last couple of years. I spent most of my time on Team Lord Irvin, but I met a lot of coaches and a lot of technical artists that showed me some skills. I've always believed that in mixed martial arts, you kind of got a tool belt, and you can never learn too much. There's always, you know, a new tool, a new trick you can learn. So definitely want to thank them. And I got to thank Team Henzo Gracie. I'm on you know, I'm a Henzo Gracie affiliate now. I've got Ricardo Almeida, Mark Henry, Jamal Patterson. I'm training with guys like Frankie Edgar, Eddie Alvarez, Edson Barbosa, Marlon Moraes. I mean, that team is incredible. Caitlin Chukagian's there with us. There's so many fantastic guys on the floor, so many people to learn from. And I just appreciate that they allowed me to join their team after leaving the Ultimate Fighter. And I feel renewed there as well, to have, you know, a new floor and new coaches and new skill sets to learn has just been an incredible ride. So thank you to the UFC for giving me a shot, you know, for being a promotion that allows women to do their best and have a champion and have an organization that gives us the spotlight to showcase our skills as professionals, you know. Like you said, for a long time I did this for free. You know, jiu-jitsu was more of an expense than anything. And now that I'm in mixed martial arts, I actually get to make a little money doing what I do best and doing what I love. So that's been amazing. And you know, Don, I got to thank guys like you who give me the opportunity in these interviews and these blogs to express myself and give me the chance to give my side of the story to the fans and to the public, because, you know, this day and age, a lot of people get on Twitter and get on Facebook and talk, and some support and some don't, but it's just nice to be able to voice my side, voice my opinion, and have a platform to express myself. So got to thank guys like you and the rest of the media that do their best to report factual information. So, I think that's it. I never get a chance to thank that many people.
that's why I created this platform, is because, you know, the fighters actually named the show. As you remember, I think the first time you came on, it was MMA Destruction. So then I put it out there, you know, what would you like the show to be named? And the fighters named the show The Fighter's Voice. And I want to thank you in return, because the shows that I did under The Fighter's Voice got the attention of iHeartRadio and Univision. And so my shows actually air on iHeart and Univision Radio. And, you know, it's a blessing to me to be able to have fighters like you come on my show and help create my legacy too. But one thing before I want to let you go, and I hope you don't mind, but I'm going to give you a new moniker, you know, because I feel you deserve it. I'm going to call you the Uncrowned Champion, because you didn't lose the fight. You didn't get taught a lesson. You know, that opportunity is still on the table. So if you don't mind, I would like to call you the Uncrowned Champion, because I think you're truly deserving of that title.
The Uncrowned sounds beautiful to me. I love the way that sounds, Don. I'll take it. I'm honored.
Well, it truly is a blessing. You know, I hope you have a tremendous holiday with your baby. It sounds like she has just reinvigorated you and your partner. I think it's a beautiful thing in life. One thing I'm for is beautiful families, and to be able to spend your time with them at the holidays. What does it mean for you to have your first Christmas, Sarge, with your baby, and to be able to spend it as a family?
It's amazing. You know, honestly, if I can be honest with you, my mom probably embarrassed. I'm not that big on Christmas. I spent so many Christmases just like in random jiu-jitsu houses or traveling and away from, you know, my mom, my dad, and my siblings. You know, I spent so many Christmases just kind of hanging out on my own. I had kind of been like, all right, you know, Christmas is Christmas. It's another day. Let me get to the gym. But now that I have my partner and my baby, like I almost went back to Vegas to go to the PI to start getting my weight back down. And usually that kind of thing is easy to me. You just pick up and go. Like, all right, I'm just going to go ahead. And I found it so hard to not be here on Christmas morning for my daughter's first Christmas. And, you know, I kept trying to tell myself, like, okay, she's going to be 8 months soon. She won't know the difference. But, like, I it was so hard to want to do that. So I pushed my trip back till after the holidays, because between my partner and my baby, I couldn't bring myself to do it. I was like, I'll just run here. I'll just do what I have to do from here until then. So It is, like I said earlier in the interview, it does change you. I try to be like, oh, parents, you know, being a parent is not going to change me. I'm the same old Sarge, but it changes things. I'm really happy to be around my family for the holidays. I'm really excited. We're going to go take her to, you know, see Santa, and I'm all, like, putting the Christmas tree up. I got, you know, my partner's teasing me. She called me Scrooge, but it's just like the Scrooge story. My heart is melting the closer we get to Christmas.
I love it. That is so cool. You know, Sarge, it truly has been a blessing for me to have you in my life in both aspects, knowing you in person, being able to shoot your fights, and being able to interview you and share your story. You truly are, like I said earlier, the Uncrowned Champion in my heart. Is, you know, you beat Modafari. The only one you haven't faced is Nico Montano. UFC, make that happen. I think it's a fight everybody wants to see. On that note, I'm truly honored. I'm going to pass the mic to you, my friend. Any friends or family, any social media sites, or just anything else you'd like to add to the program? The floor is yours, Jim.
Sure, thank you. I'm starting to get into the social media thing, so You guys can follow me at Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, all at Sergeant Charge, S-A-R-J-N, the letter N, no I, Charge, at all of those social media sites. And I guess one more shameless plug, I'm going to be doing some seminars coming up while I'm between camps. So if anybody's into jujitsu or some MMA seminars, make sure you follow me on social media, and I'll let you guys know how to attend some of my seminars here on the East Coast. Other than that, I give a quick shout out to anybody living in the state of Maryland. My uncle is Rashern Baker, and he is running for governor in 2000 in this next election, which I'm super not into politics, but I believe it's 2018. So for all of my Maryland listeners, make sure you look up Rashern Baker. He's running for governor. So other than that, that's it, man. That's all I got.
Well, it truly has been an honor, my friend. I'm glad your health is nothing wrong with it. I'm glad we were able to clear that up today on the air. You know, like I said, I know I pushed a little bit early for this interview, but it was something I'd wanted to do. And now you know why. I was in the hospital, so I couldn't kind of, I had to get all my shows lined out, but I knew I'd wanted you on. You were slated in, and I apologize for pushing for Tuesday. I was glad we were able to get you on today. You truly are a blessing in life, and really, I truly believe that moniker. You truly are the uncrowned champion. With that being said, Sajara, thank you so much for joining my listeners today. You know, you truly are a tremendous athlete and a tremendous aspect of the sport, and I look forward to having you back on again in the future.
Awesome, Don. You're one of my favorites to interview with, so I'd love to be on again, and I really appreciate you having me, and I'm so glad to hear that you're doing well. So we're both bouncing back this year. So thanks to all the listeners, and see you guys around soon.
Most definitely. You have a Merry Christmas, my friend, and give your baby a kiss, and God bless you.
I sure will. Merry Christmas.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to nickname her the uncrowned champion, because she truly didn't lose to Nico Montano, a fight that she was scheduled to fight in for the world championship. You know, things happen in the Ultimate Fighter House schedule. It's pre-recorded, and then the finale is live, as a lot of my listeners know, but who wouldn't want to see that fight? I mean, Sajara Eubanks, Nico Montano, UFC Dana White, make that happen. I think it's a fight that truly needs to be played out, as they both earn their way to that spot. With that being said, I want to thank Finnish MMA, Juan Martinez. Without you, the show wouldn't happen. I want to thank the 86ers.net, Freddie and Alfred, such wonderful, wonderful aspects of life, what you're doing for the community and people that are 86. Nobody can compare to you. You know, on that, I just want to say it's been a tremendous show this afternoon. Tuesday, got a hell of a show lined up for you. I got Kung Lee, Zach Cummings, two yet unconfirmed, but I'm sure they will confirm, because they've already agreed. I just won't put it out there unless it's 100%. But you want to tune in for the Kung Lee, Zach Cummings special Tuesday. It's a show that, well, I don't even want to miss, and I'm on it. On that note, we're going to take a quick commercial break. Thank you for joining me today. Good day, and God bless.
What up, it's your boy Slone Bone of the Mo Thugs Movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony family tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out, though. Listen, in a world full of followers, be proud to be different. Be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. We got the dopest apparel, men and women. Everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip-ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hats at a price nobody can match. I'm going to ask you this, though. What do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout out to Don McGuire, the host of The Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.
My man Nelly, Murph Lee, Puff Daddy. Puff Daddy.